Live from Black Wall Street, this is the People's Square, and I am your host, Borzo. With me, as always, is Eric Stryker. Hello, Eric.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the People's Square. I've finally been able to rest a little bit. I've been a little low energy in the last two shows, but today we have quite a show. With me today is Jack McCracken. He is a former corrections officer in the New York State prison system. So he wrote this memoir. It's called Living the Dream. It was just released on Antelope Hill Publishing. And I have a review copy. I'm going to write a formal review on National Life and Justice when I get a chance. But I'm reading this book, and just this is one of the best books I've read in a long time. The language is very sprite. You're going to laugh out loud reading it. And on top of that, you get insight into a world that most people have never looked at objectively. You'll get like a secondhand hostile view of it from the ACLU and so on, you know, and the people that want to do, as the book says, both Republicans and Democrats want to do criminal justice reform and so on. And there are issues that should be resolved in that field, but ultimately it's exactly what your racist uncle said it is. let me just read a passage here from the book. So it says, this is just a random scene from Mr. McCracken's experience. It says, once the order was given, I cracked the door. Through the gap rushed a mass of uniformed force, approaching their target with the furious eyes of scorned men. They slammed their bodies into the convict, pinning him against the concrete walls of the pen and holding him tightly in place. Despite their numerical superiority, the convict bucked and resisted, sending the combatants sprawling on the floor and turning a vertical fight into a horizontal one. Blood pooled on the ground and splattered onto my shirt and arms. Quote, I got AIDS! I got AIDS! He screamed, laughing as he thrashed. The air filled with the grunts and groans of struggle, but also with the thumps of wooden batons still hanging limply at the officer's side. In corrections, they were for show. Fear of legal reprisals had turned the once essential baton into nothing more than a visual reminder, an ornamental showpiece. It was odd that officers still carried them at all. So yeah, that's just one of many interesting moments in this book. So welcome, Mr. McCracken.
Brothers, good to be here. Fantastic reading. You should do the audiobook. That was amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, so that sounds like a very interesting and frankly, somewhat intimidating. You say in the book that this was a 6'5", 400-pound man who was high as fuck on fentanyl. So were you green when this happened, or was this more because I didn't read the whole thing, but were you experienced, or was this one of your first experiences?
So this probably happened somewhere near the middle of my career, but stuff like this was not uncommon. This kind of stuff happened all the time. Inmates know exactly what to say. They know exactly all the keywords they need to do in order to make sure they get their way in every single possible situation. So something like a fight, you know, if they say something like they have AIDS, you know, all of a sudden the use of force, as they call it in corrections, you know, might have to take a different turn because all of a sudden now there's medical needs that have to be addressed and all these things. So they prep each other, especially if they're gangbangers. They know exactly what to say, and when their friends come in, they teach them the ropes on how to manipulate the system from very early on. So
yeah,
stuff, and this, like that is all that happens all the time.
In this scene, this guy, I mean, this is quite the obstacle. Apparently, this individual in question was saying that he was suicidal, and he was probably just fucking around. I don't know. You can tell me later, but. The protocol apparently is that when an inmate says they want to kill themselves, you have to strip them naked and put them in a special smock and then put them in a special room. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So things like the Department of Corrections of My experience was with what's called NYSDOCCS. So that's the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision. It's the long title for State Corrections in New York. They have specific policies. Most of their policies, if not all, are there to keep lawsuits down. So whenever you have an inmate or any of these characters who are threatening suicide or any kind of, you know, medical harm to themselves, certain procedures have to be followed. So in this instance, this guy who was originally in SHU, which is basically like a holding pen, it's what Hollywood would call the hole. He knows that in a place like SHU, it's really hot, it's sweaty, it's gross. If he all of a sudden makes a stink, he could potentially leave SHU and go to the medical unit, which is air conditioned. You know, he'll have attention from people because when you're an inmate, nobody pays you mind unless you're screaming about something. So there's a million little angles that these guys will shoot for to get anything they want. A lot of them are just bored, you know, and this is one of these.
You know, one thing that I found very interesting is that it seems like, you know, the concept of anarcho-tyranny in the sense that the little things seem to be punished harder in some cases than the big thing. I mean, I read the anecdote in the book where you found heroin in one of their prison cells. And because your sergeant was really lazy, he's like, just flush it down the toilet and pretend you didn't see it. Meanwhile, at the same time, if you got like a ball buster with something to prove, like the woman CO, they make you go all the way and bust the balls of some older inmate who has a Dunkin' Donuts cup holding his pencils and say, oh, that's contraband. And then furthermore, one thing that really I found jarring is that they actually apply the contraband rules to the COs as well. And so you can't have, for example, luncheon meat, right? You can't have too many cigarettes. You can't have this and that and this and that. They pat you down when you go in, they pat you down when you go out, and so on. So what's that like? So basically the COs get treated like the prisoners, right?
If not worse, at least when it comes to contraband. I've seen some crazy things when it comes to items in particular. You know, other officers getting jammed up, they call it, you know, locked out without pay, with pay, disciplined for just having an item on them that, you know, is slightly, you know, frowned upon. You know, they trust you when you become a corrections officer to know how to carry and shoot three different firearms. Okay. When you go to a tower post, you have an AR-15 on you. Wow. But at the same time, if they catch you with, say, an uncooked hamburger that you were going to put on a George Foreman grill later on, you can get fired for that. So if I can be trusted with an AR-15, but I can't be with a hamburger, you know, something's wrong here. And people would get jammed up all the time for stuff like this. And a lot of it sprung from the, I don't know if you remember, but a couple of years ago, they had that big prison escape up north in the Clinton Correctional Facility. So they had those two guys going to the woods.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that was a whole boondoggle. And
Clinton is notorious. Like, San Quentin in California at least has a white gang to keep things somewhat civilized. But Clinton, I have a friend who's a white nationalist, and he went up to Clinton for a few years. And he was pretty shocked. There's literally, I mean, what's the demographic? You don't have to say the prison, obviously, but an average New York State prison. What's the demographics in there? Like, what's it look like?
I mean, it's mostly black. You know, mostly black. You're going to see a few whites every once in a while. It's very sporadic faces. The ones you do see, believe it or not, are actually a lot of like old timer Italian guys. Some of those dudes are still around, and some of those guys will actually fight to stay within the New York prison system, even though they're up against federal charges. Because if they go and get sent to a federal prison, they'll basically lose a lot of visitation rights. Which federal does not have. And because these big, like these Guido mobsters have these big families in New York, what they'll have is it's called a family reunion program. So every weekend of this big mobster can have his whole family come up. They'll bring the gravy, they'll bring the spaghetti, and they'll make a giant Sunday dinner in jail for this convict. But if they go to federal, that's all gone. So some guys like to stay.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know, another thing too, is that I noticed that there's a kind of like a general looseness in the way the prisons are run, in the sense that like they kind of tolerate the smuggling a little bit. There's a lot of dirty COs and stuff. And in your book, you kind of make it sound like it's largely the fault of the guy above you, and then one guy above him, and then of course the governor, that sets the actual tempo for how a prison is run, right?
Right. So it's going to change depending on the facility, because each correctional facility is run by, at least in New York, they're called a superintendent, and that's basically like the warden. Okay. He sets and he basically is the one who decides, okay, which rules are we really going to hammer down on during my tenure here. So you might have one superintendent come in for a few years who's very, very focused on like hammering down on inmates, stopping the contraband, stopping this, stopping that. Then if he retires, he might get replaced by maybe a status seeker, a ladder climber, one of these guys from Albany who really wants to make a name for himself. And all of a sudden, he's all about inmate rights. He's very loose and relaxed, and he doesn't want to cause problems because he's brand new. There's a lot of different kind of characters that come in and that run these prisons, and it really depends on where you're at and who's kind of running the show.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is that there's a lot of stuff, too, with the ACLU and the fear of lawsuits and so on that kind of makes it very difficult to run the prison. And I find that, again, that builds the anarcho-tyranny idea that the people that are the law enforcement officers, which actually I didn't know the extent of how much paramilitary-style training correction officers get. It's actually kind of interesting. They have like all these, you were talking about the drill sergeants and so on. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the fear of these Jewish lawyers is what turns these prisons into a total circus, you know?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, we've heard stories, you know, I wasn't there for that because this happened in a different facility than the one I was working at, but we would always hear stories of literally NGOs like the ACLU, all these various different prison advocacy groups would literally walk an inmate housing unit. They would get special permission to walk around the block, talk to inmates cell to cell as they all walked around, and they would point at things that they didn't like in the prison, and there would be one of the head lawyers there just keeping notes of everything they saw. And then as soon as they left, you know, within a few months, all the things that they pointed out and didn't like would be gone or changed. And without any warning, without any practice or anything, you would come to work one day and all the policies would be changed because an NGO walked the block.
Oh, man.
It is wild, the kind of stuff that happens on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's really just not fair for people who come to work every day, they clock in, they want to do a good job because they have that that instinct inside them to just do well. But how can you, you know, uphold law and strive for order if the order doesn't enforce any of your own values? You know, it's
right.
Very tough. You're in a situation where you're, you know, what do you do?
One of the parts that actually had me laughing out loud was when you were describing what the inmates call the grape. And that's apparently when like some black dude starts fucking the finger of a rubber glove. And I was like fucking cracking up about that because like it shows like the desperation and so on of these people, you know, being kind of caged. Not that they don't deserve it, but it shows the lengths they're willing to go to. Because you were saying in the book how much pornography is all over the place in the prison, right?
Oh my God, it is everywhere. There's not an inmate in prison that doesn't have at least a stack of porno mags, you know, some sort of masturbatory material in there. And I get it. You know, you don't have access to women. You don't have access to that, a release for that urge except for porn. But there's just so much of it. And then when you're pent up all day and you're just like, you know, using the consuming this material over and over again, Your mind just gets warped. So it's actually one of the things that I think should be banned from prison. I don't think it's actually fair on these inmates that they are kept in such a situation where they, you know, their minds are almost twisted and it has nothing to do. They can't control it. You know, I mean, of course, if a guy's going to have access to porn, he's going to, you know,
right.
I think it should be removed, and it's gonna not only make a more dignified workplace for officers, but a more dignified life for these inmates who get locked up here.
Yeah, another thing that I kind of laughed at was the scene in the book when you're in the guard tower watching down at the yard, and there's two black guys like jerking each other off in the middle. It was like broad daylight, and they're in the yard jerking each other off. And what's interesting about that is that you also make sure to mention that prison rape at this point is not that common, that it's mostly a Hollywood innovation at this point because of the reforms they did in 2003. But there's still like some weird homosexual activity going on, right?
I would definitely say so. Yeah. So that for those who purchase the book, you'll see in one of the chapters, I go through this story where there are these two inmates who are just openly in the middle of a giant field, probably like 2 square miles wide, just jerking each other off right there. And I'm working in a tower and I get a phone call. Hey, you see these guys? And I'm like, yeah, I see them. Why? He's like, take a closer look. So I take binoculars out and I zoom in. I'm like, what the fuck is this? So next thing I know, I get another call from a supervisor who says, hey, you know, we're going to go apprehend these people and bring them up to store these people away because they can't be doing that. We need you to film it because we're going to go and apprehend them. We need video proof that, you know, if there's a fight or something, we're covered, that there's, you know, the use of force went down properly. I'm like, okay. I don't realize it at first, but after I took the camcorder out and I put it on the tripod, I screw it in and I zoom in, I turn it on, flip the viewfinder open. I'm filming gay porn. And I'm getting paid to do it. And I'm like, this is out of fucking control. This is out of control.
But the best part, though, was the scene when you're struggling with this giant inmate. You're trying to control him. And then the guy that – because you need to film every violent or sexual or whatever act that's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this scene where you're, like, desperately struggling with this inmate. And you got a boomer with a camera. He can't figure out how to turn it on. Dude, that's like total. That's like a sitcom moment right there.
It definitely happens. There's a lot of people in corrections. God bless them. They refuse to retire because they're making so much money doing overtime and all these things that they just don't retire. It would actually be a detriment. They're up to their ears in debt with all these big trucks and fancy toys they've gotten throughout the years, and they can't retire. But unfortunately, you know, as these policies get more modernized and you get a policy like you have to record whenever there's going to be like a cell extraction or any of these uses of force, you're going to run into these situations where boomers don't even know how to put an SD card into a camcorder. So you got to find someone in the jail who knows even what that is.
Oh, man.
That happens.
Oh, good God. Yeah. You know, one thing I like about this book, though, is that you write about it in a very kind of big picture way. I don't get the sense of resentment or hatred or you're mad or anything, except at the people in power. Basically, the inmates are a product of a corrupt government and a really kind of a government that has really strange priorities and stuff. So it's kind of interesting to see like this kind of circus where you got like a bunch of Irishmen and a bunch of Italian guys that are corrections officers sent in to police these monkeys. and it's just a recipe for disaster. Like, I mean, what do you think is going through the mind? I always wonder when I see a police officer, a white police officer especially, what's going through their minds after like, say, 5 years working on this type of job?
I would say he's probably thinking the exact same kind of things that we think, but he's not allowed to say it, you know.
Right.
The thing with corrections is that you do have a lot of older boomer types. You do have a lot of guys who couldn't cut it to be cops. Corrections, because it's something that's available. They have access to that as a career. Whereas police, you know, they're already indoctrinated. They have degrees. You know, they get paid a lot more, so that pension weighs a lot more with them. Guys in corrections, I think a lot of them could probably be a lot more sympathetic to our viewpoint, simply because of the lack of indoctrination from the outside. They see a lot more fucked up shit than cops would ever do. I stand by that because they see this kind of stuff every day. Cops, every once in a while, you'll see a public freakout video, and that's their experience. So yeah, it really depends on where you are in the state too, because if you're working at a prison that's a little bit more rural near farms and stuff, you might not have any Italian guys at all. You might have just country bumpkins, rednecks, things like that, and they're good people too.
Yeah, you know, one thing that was also interesting was looking at the politics of the labor union. You know, I noticed that leftists are really hostile to both the Police Benevolence Association, the police union, and of course the corrections union. They're very, very hostile, and these are legit working class guys. And one reason I think that the left is hostile to them is that they don't have the opportunity to do what Trotskyists and communists call salting. So for a communist, for some grad student who thinks he's a Marxist, joining the teachers union or joining the communication workers union and so on, these are very easy to do, and they actually make a point of infiltrating these. But from your anecdotes of the kinds of discussions that happen at the union hall at the corrections officers union, this is a very different world than, say, the teachers union, right?
Absolutely. So during my career there, I worked for 5 years. I was elected to be recording secretary for my local stewardship. It was me and like maybe 5 or 6 other guys. I wanted to learn more because I've always been a working class kind of guy. I've always been pro labor union. My dad was in unions, you know, so on and so forth. So I wanted to try it out. Little did I know that the corrections officer union, it's called in New York State, it's called NYSCOBA. It stands for the New York State Corrections Officer Police Benevolent Association. And they take care of, you know, negotiating the contract, negotiating disciplinary stuff. Whenever they want to fire you, they got to go through the union first before they can do that. So they do serve a purpose. But when it comes to any of the major policy changes, when it comes to swinging the pendulum back into the favor of the working man, groups like NYSCOBA, these law enforcement unions, they do nothing. These leftists, they kvetch, you know, they do all this groaning about, you know, like you said, not being able to infiltrate. If they only knew what went on behind closed doors, they wouldn't want to because it's completely inefficient. Nothing ever gets done that's a benefit of any line staff. So, you know, it leaves you after a while second guessing yourself, like, what is the point of this? If everyone is just going to be self-servient and just try to use this to advance their own careers, then it's not really a union as much as it is a good old boys club. Or just a way to advance, you know, yourself.
Yeah.
It soured me to it.
It was really touching the part where you were saying that for someone that lives outside of New York City, a corrections officer job, as shitty as it might be, is a way to get out of, say, a working class cycle or even a poverty cycle, because they, you know, you can actually get a job there even if you don't go to college. You know, when I was growing up, I actually applied to be a corrections officer, because believe it or not, even though I lived in Queens in New York City, the job prospects there aren't that much better than, say, Rochester or Buffalo or whatever. So, you know, I actually applied to be a corrections officer, and I noticed that there was a big wait list. It could take years to get a call back. So what are the advantages of being a corrections officer from that point of view?
Yeah. So, the pay is pretty good, considering where a lot of COs come from, where they live. A lot of guys, especially, you know, out in the rural countryside, their taxes are super low, and the CO wage is going to stay the same no matter where you are in the state. So for the guy in the city, like you, who became a corrections officer, you're going to be getting paid, say, starting out $40,000 a year. That $40,000 goes a lot longer for somebody upstate who pays half the taxes and the standard of living is a lot lower. So, you know, if you're one of these guys who really needs to get some steady, solid pay, you may want to consider it. The entry qualifications are not that tough. In fact, I believe as of last year, and this goes to show you where the state wants to take this kind of thing, they've completely scrubbed their entrance exam to become a corrections officer in the state.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, so you don't even have to take a test anymore. Now all you have to do is apply and pass the physical examinations, and you're set. And I believe they're doing that because they want more minority COs.
Yeah, probably. Because I did really well on the corrections test, but I didn't get a call back. Probably. I don't know. There might be a million. I took the test like 12 years ago, so that's probably lost.
It does. It does take
a long time. Dream of mine. That's a dream that I'll never fulfill.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all of my friends growing up, all like these working class kids and shit, they all took the test because it was a way to make a decent salary, you know. Same with the firefighters and so on. But the corrections officers seems more accessible. And you were saying before that the basically the choices you have, again, people that don't live in New York don't understand this, but you say in the book that if you live outside of the city, that basically your only choices are McDonald's or the military. People don't understand that most of New York is a massive state, and most of it has more in common with the rest of the Rust Belt than it does with the city. Now, I would argue that the city should be narrowed down to just Manhattan. Because honestly, most of New York City is really similar, particularly places that are really industrially depressed, like Queens, full of illegal aliens and so on. So these state jobs are a way to get yourself out of poverty or out of a lower middle class existence, have a little money to invest in your future and have a nice retirement in particular. So tell me a little bit about that, the McDonald's versus military dichotomy.
So it really, it takes you living in a place like that to understand. I'm sure a lot of the listeners here understand that completely. You know, unless you have, some sort of connection or you have a really, really credentialed education, if you're out in the rural, if you're in the sticks, your choices are very limited. And that was, I faced that same paradigm myself. It's like, what am I going to do? I'm out of high school. I've seen my other friends go to college, community college, things like this. And what do they end up doing? They end up working in like the mall as soon as they graduate. There's no change.
Yeah.
So I can't go that route either. You know, and you see something like corrections, it looks a lot more palatable. You get benefits, pension. It's one of the last few jobs nowadays that you'll get a pension from. You're not going to get anything else. That alone is great. But you don't understand when you first apply for something like that. And if you do wear the blue shirt and get your badge and clock in every single day and deal with these maniacs and see all these horrendous things, the only reason you have that job is because you basically signed up to be or to live a life as a mercenary.
Yeah.
You know, your values are never upheld. Your idea of what society should look like, you know, this is your society. And life in corrections, you're never going to get any glimpse of that. This is purely what power wants, and they're going to get it as long as you are employed.
One thing I like about your book is that there is a kind of compassion for all the players and all the actors involved. You know, like there is a sense of almost empathy in the book that I think is really important. And I find that guys like us, you know, New Yorkers, to a lesser extent, you yourself as well, we have seen it all. We've seen everything. And once you see everything, you kind of find this moment of enlightenment where you realize, like, this is, we're in the middle of some kind of evil experiment. and once you hit that realization, you stop personalizing and stop being resentful, and you start actually thinking about problems from a bigger picture perspective. And that's what I really love about this book, is that like when I was reading it, like my initial impression was that, okay, I just saw what it was about, and I'm like, okay, this is gonna be about like just a bunch of stuff about blacks and black crime and so on, and there's a lot of stuff like that in there, but there's also like the institutional element of how this is completely preventable but there are people in power that want it to be this way. And on top of that, want to release these like insane, like frankly insane people into the public again. And for someone like you, I mean, you as someone who spent a lot of time with these criminals, what do you think of criminal justice reform? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm going to quote Mike Judge's Idiocracy. I think there's a line there where he says, justice is not only blind, but it's also a little retarded. and you're going to see that, you know, working in corrections. And it's one of the places where just nothing makes sense. The term clown world is used a lot, and corrections definitely is just an upside down, just crazy land. And the worst crime is that, you know, for a department, again, I always use New York as an example because that's where I work, but for New York State docs, in the title is the word corrections. It's implied that inmates go here and their behavior is corrected. But in the modern day, prisoners, their behavior is just never corrected. If anything, it's tempered. It's enabled. They become entitled after the prison experience. And then when we get let out, you know, whether or not they actually commit crime again, because many do, the recidivism rate is very high in this country. Ultimately, prison doesn't act as a deterrent to crime at all. It's not scary. It's not hard. And in fact, the only times it is hard is where, you know, during instances where it doesn't make any sense. So just it's just a bad experience overall, whether you're working there, whether you're living there. If you find yourself to be a supervisor there, which if you're already at that point, you're probably a little bit sipping the Kool-Aid anyway. It's just a bad place. And I think it can be fixed. But all it requires is that people actually stand up for themselves and their rights. And it comes from the workers. You know, they can't tolerate this stuff anymore. Corrections officers love to complain and bitch and moan, but they never do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was years ago, I was a member of a labor union myself, and I found a lot of common experiences to yours in a different dimension, but common things, the same characters, the same type of guys, and the same impotent bitching. And, you know, that's kind of like probably the disempowerment of labor in this country has a lot to do with it. But so let me get to the next thing here. So basically, the prison system is like just a place for gangs to set up shop. Someone was saying, by the way, is it correct? His name is Radu, the guy that
I got AIDS. Radu. That's a little bit of an inside joke because whenever you're working behind bars, there always seems to be an inmate named Radu or old timer OT. That just seems to be the case. There's always a Radu.
So, have you ever seen the show Oz?
I was going to ask about that too.
I know we're being bug men here, but what's up,
bro? Have you seen these bug podcasters?
Have you seen these bug podcasters? No, but how close to the truth is Oz?
Oz is very entertaining show, but it's completely fictional. The kind of craziness that you see in there is just insane.
Yeah, they had like an inmate dying like a week, and you had all kinds of. I remember there was one episode where the inmate kills a Nazi guard because he sharpened his fingernails, and he just like Wolverine slashed him to death. It got very comical at times.
That's ridiculous. You had at one point they had a guard was giving like an inmate like a special like they, so had access to a bathtub. You know, it's like what? Where do they have a bathtub? It's like none of this makes sense, but. It's a very entertaining show. I recommend watching it just for the entertainment. Yeah, you can handle that degeneracy, cool, but
I love how, like, yeah, it's the neo-Nazis that are raping people. Yeah, right. Like, that's such nonsense. But, Oz is one of my favorite shows. I just love the politics and the way the different types of inmates interact and stuff. I just love that stuff. But, yeah, it's going to be very dramatized, to say the least. Real prison, like, what are like the politics, like the different, how many gangs were in your prison and how do they get along? Were there beefs? What's the story with that?
So You know, I really think it depends on what region you are in the U.S. Now, as a corrections officer, you'd think you would actually be armed with all this kind of gang knowledge before you head out behind bars. But yeah. they don't arm you with any of that stuff. They give you like maybe a 40-minute class in the academy about gangs and what to look out for. And that is it. Later on, when you do become an officer and you're out of the academy, if you want to join what's called the I believe it's the CIU. This is New York again. The crisis intervention unit. You can learn all about the gangs and stuff, but it's kind of like a first come first serve basis, and they also have to like you a little bit. There's some nepotism involved there as well. So behind bars, you're going to see in New York especially, it's mostly Bloods. The Blood is the predominant gang. They have the most bodies behind bars, and as a result, they have the most power. The next are some of the Hispanic gangs. You're going to see like Latin Kings are a big element. And then beyond that, the Crips are almost non-existent. You barely see any. But if there are, de facto, they seem to err on the side of the Bloods. And we had one, and in one of the facilities I worked at, he was like one of the only Crips I ever met. But they called him Purple, which is red and blue combined. And he had to work with the Bloods a lot to get anything done.
That's interesting. Yeah. More like a West Coast thing.
Yes, I think out there the Crips are more predominant. And out on the West Coast, they probably play a little bit smarter because they will actually divide a housing unit by gang just to keep violence low. They don't do that in New York. In New York, they don't recognize organizations. So,
what's it like to be – so back in the day, I knew this kid. He broke my heart. He was like a kind of like a drug dealer. So he's a piece of shit to an extent. But he went upstate, and he was a white kid. And when he got out after 5 years, he looked fucking crazy. He had he had like 3 teardrops tattooed to his face. and he was like, he looked fucking crazy. Because I knew this kid growing up, and I was kind of friends with him and shit. Though I always got pissed off when he was selling drugs because I was a skinhead. And, you know, he just made some bad decisions and so on. But after he went upstate, he seemed like a different person. Like he just seemed like he was like totally mentally he snapped. And he told me when I bumped into him at a store once years ago, he told me that he joined the Crips. Or no, I'm sorry, the Bloods. He joined the Bloods. And what's it like? Just explain to me, like, did you see younger white inmates, and what was life in prison for them like?
You did. A lot of them were in there for like drugs. My particular situation, my facility, I saw a lot of young guys. Yeah, they could join the Bloods. A lot of Bloods will not care if you're white or you're Hispanic. As long as you're flying their flag and as long as you're there when like shit hits the fan, they don't care. You also have to keep in mind that there's different sects of Bloods. So while you may have, like, say, a street Blood who gets locked up, and when he goes behind bars, he meets up with all the Bloods that he met on the street. But behind bars, you also have a sect of prison Bloods who are Bloods that people that became Bloods in prison. And because you have this distinction, there's almost sometimes animosity between the two. So it's almost like different sets, you know, as you really have to be mindful. So, like, you might have, like, 3 or 4 black guys, all Bloods. You also have to worry about like, okay, this guy is a prison Blood. That guy's a street Blood. And he's trying to run his racket in here so that when he gets out, he can do this, that, and this. White guys will sometimes get absorbed in there too, depending on the circumstances. But a lot of times they only do that if they're trying to, you know, play games, if they're trying to sell drugs in jail, if they're trying to make money, you know. The more involved you are in prison politics as an inmate, the more fucked up you're going to end up being because these gangs will come down on you.
And the more time you're going to do, too, because they do get caught for shit, right?
Yeah, yeah. And if you're a white guy, you're going to take fall for a lot of, like, black guys with clout, too. So, you know, if anyone listening, if you ever go to jail, don't do anything for anybody. If somebody offers you, like, zippy cakes or a bag of shebangs, just say no. Say if they offer you shower shoes because you don't have any yet and your cell is completely bone dry, you got nothing in it, just say no. You'll survive because as soon as you take something from somebody – you're somebody's bitch, and they're gonna.
Yeah. You also gotta learn. You gotta learn the system as well. My wife is actually listening in on the stream, and she's ER nurse, and she says that even homeless crackheads know how the system works, and they threaten suicide in order to stay in the hospital beds. That's you got to learn basically how all these things work. Just throw out any principles or any notions and go on basically on pure survival mode and how to game the system.
Absolutely. One of the things they would do is they always say they have chest pains. And then as soon as you hear that, it's like, uh-oh, you know, the nurse has to come. All these special precautions have to be made in order to, like, you know, pander to this inmate who is just having a ghost illness. You know, he's just doing it because he made a bad bet and now he can't pay up, so he's trying to escape. That kind of stuff happens all the time. I touch about that in the book as well. There's a medical chapter in the back about how that's a sham. But yeah, they know exactly what to say. They can game the system very well.
Oh, so they do the old, I can't breathe.
All the time. All the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's typical. Like, I've heard that too. Yeah. So what would be like, Now that the U.S. government is just going to start putting people in prison for their political ideology, what are, aside from what you just said, what are some other good prison survival tips for people that get locked up? Like, what are some just pointers overall?
Okay, that's a good question, actually. maintain your contacts. Talk to your family, send letters, you know, take advantage. Prison offers you all kinds of stuff due to part of our, you know, global homo policies that are kind of set in place. Take advantage of it. Why not? You know, don't do anyone else's time. Don't fuck around with any of these gangs or anything. You know, as soon as they realize that you're not about that life, they're just going to lay off. They're not going to, like, pester you forever until you do whatever you want. Just, you know, do your own thing. Respectfully decline. Write your family. Read. Working out is huge. The best inmates to work with were the guys, the power lifters, the guys who worked out every day.
Because you got weights there.
What's that?
You got weights in the New York system?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They
got weights.
Back to New York. If the FBI is going to come and get me, I better move back to New York then. You just come out jacked with a huge brain. That's what you make it, you know.
I've seen some guys. I swear to God, they're like monsters. But they're the nicest, most well mannered people, because they're just coming off that constant dopamine hit of just hitting like these reps, and they're just cool. You know, it's always these like skinny, like cracked out guys that are always the ones who are causing all kinds of trouble.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, those guys, they're going to be using drugs more and stuff. So tell me, was there like a, I've read a lot about and heard from friends about prison wine, where they make that shit and they get fucked up and then they start doing stupid ass shit. Is that really a thing or is it just an urban legend?
Oh, yeah. No, it happens. It happens. A lot of it starts out with just fermenting leftovers that they sneak out of the mess hall.
Oh, God. So, yeah. Have you ever tasted it?
No, God, no. No, no, no. Prison food, I'll eat. I have had a lot of prison food just to try it out, just see what it was like. Disgusting, by the way. But yeah, no, guys would say, like, in the morning, you would always get served a side of fruit, banana, an apple, or something like that. Guys would just stick it in their pocket because they're allowed to bring fruit back. They're allowed to bring bread back to the cell. It's a policy. Because they could use that for meals in the cell. They don't want to go out for, say they go for breakfast. If they don't want to go get lunch later, they don't have to. They can stay in the cell. But if they bring the bread or the apple back, you know, they can eat it and do whatever and save the state some money by not getting a meal. But what guys would do is they would save the apple peels, the apples, the banana peels, the bread, and they would kind of like stash it away somewhere, not in the cell, and just let it ferment for weeks. And sometimes you have COs that don't look or know what they're looking for. A lot of times they would hide it in a common area garbage bin. Like a garbage can, but it would be under. They would stuff it into like a garbage bag, and they would stick the garbage bag underneath the actual garbage bag that lines the can. And because the inmates take the trash out, they're never going to rat out their friends making wine. The CEO's never going to get up off the chair to take a look unless he knows what he's looking for. So this stuff will sit there for months and ferment. And next thing you know, it's Christmas time, and everyone's got some hooch.
Damn. So you can technically get wasted in prison and then go back and cuddle up with your rubber glove. That doesn't sound so bad.
Well, if we're talking about prison, prison myths and prison stories here, I mean, so any truth to the idea that you need to definitely, you know, stick yourself out as someone not to be messed with by trying to either look crazy or fight the biggest guy you see on your first day in prison?
I mean, unless you want to go to SHU like day one, then I guess you could do that. But no, I really don't think it's necessary. Honestly, these inmates are going to know what you're in for before you even talk to any of them. What they'll do is they'll see you come in. They'll go up, say you have like one of these inmates who've been in for a while who kind of knows security. This is an inmate who probably like mops the floors a lot. You know, he's kind of buddy-buddy with security, talks to him a lot. He'll go up to the guy running the unit. He's like, hey, who's the new guy? The CO just be like, oh yeah, that's so and so. Yeah, he's a rapo. He rapes some chicks while he's here. And the inmate will be like, oh, is that real spit? And he turns around, and he tells everyone on the block, and all of a sudden this guy is now dead. maybe not physically, but you know, just he's persona non grata. So the only thing really gonna fuck you up day one is if you're going behind bars with like a substantial crime that everyone hates, and rapists and pedophiles are the number one thing. If you're one of those things, you might as well just neck.
You got to go to protective custody if you're doing that. Like, even though, yeah, I mean, like, I've heard stories about that. That is true about prison, that like a lot of crews, they'll like initiate you for protection or whatever if you're in jail by getting you to beat up a child molester or something. Like that's definitely part of the prison culture. It's kind of interesting though to see that, in a sense, and this isn't to glorify prisoners, but in a sense, prisoners have a more basic understanding of morality than people outside of the prison. In some sense, don't they?
It would seem so. I mean, in a place like prison, a lot of times the inmates and security staff will walk side by side when it comes to viewing certain degenerates in a certain light. So, you know, obviously pedophiles, they're disgusting. They're not to be dealt with at all. Certain prisons actually have what are called sex offender units. They will actually put these people in there just to keep them away from the rest of the general population because they know how, you know, crazy it is. And a lot of times these people have to take certain classes to be approved to go to be released. Like they have to take like these kumbaya, like circle groups for X amount of months before they're allowed to be released. And that's why they go into those units as well. But yeah, inmates know where the sex offenders kind of come from. They know who the sex offenders are on the block. They know who the rapists are on the block, and they get treated as a result.
Well, I think also a big factor in the way that kind of system works is that a lot of those inmates are pretty much like they were molested themselves. You know, like a lot of these mentally ill people, they were molested as kids by, you know, black ones and white ones even. You know, so when they see that shit, they just snap. Like, I remember reading a story. There was like, I don't know what he was. He was probably like a Puerto Rican or a Dominican or something. And he saw in the middle of New York City, this guy who's a repeat offender, he saw two men kissing in public. And then he just snapped and he killed them. And then he went up, you know, he went up forever. And, you know, not to say you should do that. That's not right. But regardless of that, though, like that guy probably was molested as a kid by a homosexual and probably just snapped, you know. Like, I mean, I'm sure like there's a ton of people that were molested as kids in there, right?
I would imagine so. Yeah, no, absolutely. There was actually one of those sex offender units. I used to work kind of adjacent to one. I would never really work in there just by chance. But there were two inmates locked in there for sex offenses. One was a lot younger. One was a lot older. The two had actually developed like a romantic relationship, as disgusting as that sounds. It came to our attention later on that the older inmate was the one that sexually molested the younger one years ago.
Oh, my God.
And somehow they had both been admitted to the same unit, which really shouldn't happen. Policy prevents that. Any kind of like relations, they get separated. One will stay in one facility, the other one will, and they'll never cross paths. But this, I guess, kind of just was allowed to happen by mistake. And they just started going at it Even though it was disgusting. And this is the kind of stuff you'll see all the time if you become a corrections officer, and it's vile.
There's another part in there where apparently New York State has conjugal visits, right?
Yes, New York State's one of the very few. I forget the other states. I think there's like maybe two or three others that have the conjugal visits. And this is called a family reunion program. It's basically like little trailers that are built on the outskirts of the jail themselves. and if you have a good behavior record, if you're not violent, if you're not getting caught up in all kinds of disciplinary action, you can have approved people come visit you, and they'll bring in food. They can bring in all kinds of stuff, and also be beds. So you can have, like, say, your wife come visit you for a whole weekend, a whole 2 days. Oh, wow. You can do whatever you want with her in there, you know. And it's called the Family Reunion Program, but a lot of COs called it – it's called FRP. They called it the Felon Reproductive Program. It's for a lot of kids. Oh,
prison doesn't even sound that bad. No, I'm kidding.
Actually, TV's Frank has a great question here. Can we get a most interesting object turned into a shank story? Or shiv, I think is what he means. But yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So that kind of stuff, you know what? A lot of guys will turn basic, simple stuff into shanks. The worst that I had experienced was one time they pulled out of they had a carpentry shop. And they pulled out a whole bunch of various like files and stuff that apparently had went missing, but the civilian staff just never reported it missing. And they were filed into almost like Roman gladiuses that they were going to use at some point and stash them away. And the guy that turned them in was just trying to get out of extended shoot time. So he was going to give up some contraband for like a lighter sentence. And he called them, oh, these are CO killers. You know, they were going to use them against you guys, blah, blah, blah. Who knows if it was true, but we're just glad to get rid of, like, the knives and stuff. But a lot of the weapons and stuff that I saw were simple things. Like, one guy went after another guy with a pen. You know, a pen's not a weapon. You can carry a pen wherever you want. Is it going to do a lot of damage? Probably not, but it's better than, you know, using your fingernails, you know, like in Oz or something like that.
Damn. I mean, like, yeah, that moment in the book was actually kind of disturbing, where you found the inmate with the weed on him, and then he snitched on the other inmates that were in shop class making Roman gladiuses and storing them away. That must have gotten to you a little bit, didn't it, when you found it?
It did. I mean, just for the record, I didn't find them. I wasn't even there when that happened. Ooh. This is all stuff that happens, you know, of course, but I had nothing to do with it. I think this happened all on day shift, and I was more of kind of like a night sky. So I would show up and hear all the stories about what happened. But yeah, I mean, after you hear something like that, you do kind of, it reminds you just exactly where you're working. This isn't all just, you know, hanging out with your bros. This isn't all just complaining about like how ineffectual the union is. You're here to do a job, and they pay you to do this job for a reason. And that's to deal with shit like this every once in a while when it happens. And thank God we pulled that stuff out, because if something crazy happened, who knows what could have resulted in that?
You know, I have a relative that went to a minimum security prison for a while, mm-hmm. and he said you were talking about the food before. He said the food was comparable to a typical Italian joint that his mother would make for him. Mm-hmm. Why is the food so bad in different types of prisons? Like, food, and would you agree that minimum security prisons food is better than max security?
Well, in New York State, it's kind of standardized. So the same kind of slop you're eating in a maximum security, you know, tank. Right. Yeah, exactly. In New York, they actually call it quick chill because it's all boiled in these bags. And then they'll take it out of these giant industrial vats and then cut it open. And it'll just kind of slop into these tins, and then they'll distribute the tins to different blocks.
There we go.
It's disgusting. Yeah. It's basically think of a banquet TV dinner, but three times as nasty. So this individual you met, I'm not sure what his situation was or when
He went away in New Jersey. So.
Oh, okay. So it could be different then. But the food is disgusting. And it doesn't need to be disgusting. But the only reason why it is that bad is to save the state money. They create this slurry, this garbage, and feed it to these people. And I would guarantee that if you were to go back to the old days, The old days, they would have these farms, and inmates would learn to cultivate, and they would work with animals, and they would go to, they had prison butcheries and bakeries, and they would cook these fresh meals every day for these people, and inmates were so happy. Corrections officers were happy as well because they got to sample it, you know?
Right.
But they went away with all that kind of stuff, I'd say probably, I don't know exactly when, because obviously I wasn't working back when that was a thing. But they went from this more traditional meal system to this garbage. And I think it just makes people angrier than they need to be all around.
Yeah. You know, one thing I'll say is that I was going to ask you about, what was I going to say? I was going to ask you about the peanut butter, because you actually made a thing in the book to mention that. So I was locked up in a New York jail for a little bit, many, many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I, by the way, they used to call me MacGyver in there because I was the one that figured out how to use the little tiny cereal boxes to drink water from them. You just, you wrap the plastic around the box and you put it under the sink because it's impossible. First of all, the sink is disgusting. And also it's attached to the disgusting toilet. Mm-hmm. So being able to drink water is actually quite a thing in prison, in jail or even prison as well. So right. I went to jail and I actually was able to, and all the blacks, I was in the felony pen and all the blacks were like, yo, that's MacGyver. But one thing I remember from that little stint that I did was that the peanut butter tasted like chocolate. Why is that?
That's a good
question. Why does it taste like chocolate?
That's a good question. I'm not sure why. I don't know that in particular. But a lot of guys, if you're locked up, I'm a big advocate of peanut butter. I love peanut butter. And if you ever get locked up, just buy a whole bunch of it because it's high calories, protein, yeah. All that kind of stuff. It's good, you know, and it'll sit around forever and not really go bad unless you're ignoring it. As for why it tastes like chocolate, I have no idea. That's kind of gross, actually.
Yeah, it was just like a peanut butter sandwich. And in a little plastic package and throw it at you. And I took one bite and I'm like, yo, this tastes like chocolate. I'm like, I'm not kidding. I was only in there. It was for some stupid, it was just for a street fight. But when I got out at like the 70th hour, because after 72 hours, they just got to drop your charges. And they ended up dropping them anyway with a sealed record and so on, because I had no criminal record. But I was there for like 2.5 days and I didn't see any crazy stuff in the jail. And I was in there with like actual guys that were in there for shootings and stuff. And everyone there was super well behaved and actually really polite and stuff. And I think it's because they sort of understand that you're in a cell with tons of people that are crazy. So like everyone was like, oh, I'm sorry, my friend. Oh, sorry, sir. And things like that. So everyone was really polite. But is that so in prison?
I mean, yeah, it depends. So it sounds like you might have been in like a city lockup or something like that.
Yeah,
And the lower you go, like on the prison hierarchy. So there's like city, there's county, there's state, and there's federal. The lower you are on that ladder, the more I think well-behaved you're going to be. Simply because those other denominations of prison, you might see a lot more guys who've never been in jail before. So running in the back of their mind are like, oh my God, this is going to be just like Oz. This is going to be crazy. In reality, it's like, so everyone's like super tense, but a place like state where you've got guys in there for life, who've been doing this every single day for the past like 3 decades, they're more willing to just like wild out and just go crazy because this is their everyday life. You know, they view those places as their community. So if you have one bad egg, they're more willing to like step to that guy, scream at him, do crazy stuff.
One thing I noticed though was the sheer indifference of the staff. Now this is probably not true where you were, because I was in a city jail, so that's like mostly black staff.
Mm.
But I had like a couple of kids, two white kids actually, in my pen, and they were fucking like. This kid was dying because he was a heroin addict and he was getting sick and he was on the floor convulsing. And I was like yelling at the fucking prison guards to at the jail people to get him something, get him some whatever they give heroin addicts. And they were just ignoring us. And this kid was like on the ground, like basically having a seizure. I was like freaking out. So what's the role of kind of that type of, and this is a very New York thing, by the way. Like I live in another part of the country, and I noticed that people in different parts of America, especially in the middle of the country, are a lot more, they're a lot more, they care a little more. But it seems like in New York, because of all the racial incoherence and the red tape and so on, that there's this kind of culture of indifference with the staff in some cases, isn't there?
It can happen, yeah. Where I worked, a situation like that would never have happened, simply because you have these guys who are just super hyper aware that any little misstep, any little thing that goes wrong on a unit could spell the end of their career and even possible jail time for them. So if you had a guy dying, you're going to see COs wake up for the first time that they've probably woken up in the past like months, you know, because sometimes these things don't happen for that long in between. And they're going to, you know, they're going to do all the procedures. They're going to pull their PIN, which is a personal alarm system. They're going to call medical alert. You know, they're going to do everything they need to do to bring this, you know, render aid to this inmate. Because if they don't, their lives are just as ruined as the guy who's going to like die here. They might as well be. That's what's going on in a CO's mind.
Oh, okay.
Now, in a city, that might be different because you have, like you said, different clientele working the beat. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there.
Yeah, they're just fucking with us. Like, I remember the black lady who's the, I guess that's a CO as well. Mm-hmm. She got McDonald's at 5 o'clock in the morning, and she just pulled up a chair and ate it in front of us. Well, we were like, yo, fuck you, bitch. Like,
now that does happen. Yeah.
Well, what I like about your book too, is that it shows too, that the COs and the inmates kind of have almost like parallel cultures in the sense that like a snitch amongst COs is seen as lower than a rat, right? It's like the lowest form of life, just like in the, amongst the inmates, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I think, you know, the adage that, you know, you lie around with dogs all day, you're bound to pick up some fleas.
Yeah.
These are some of the ticks and the values that you pick up as a CO. You know, snitches are scum. You can never trust these people. And you had a lot of them working behind
the scenes.
Yeah. And, you know, inmates have that same value system. You know, fuck snitching, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, like if I'm working in a jail, and I know that a fellow officer or something is bringing in drugs, for instance, or bringing in something bad that's going to put all of us in danger, it becomes harder to not be a snitch because this is bad. And a lot of times that stuff was overlooked. Like if you found somebody who was doing something really heinous, if you don't give them up, then you're going to be, you know, castrated by everybody else. But again, your results may vary. If you do decide to do this as a career, or if you do get locked up, what you experience is not going to be 100% reflective of what I went through, but it is very similar across the board.
So just give me the absolute worst thing that you've seen in your time as a CO.
Worst thing? Okay.
Yeah. I guess sit and think about that.
Well, I'm trying to think if it's I probably wrote about it. There's two moments in the book that probably are tied. One was the one time where I was filming those two guys in the yard jerking each other off. That was a very low point in my life. the other time I was working a medical unit. And you had an inmate who basically lived there. He basically had a permanent cell in this fancy medical cell. He had his own bed with his own like reclining features on it. He had his own flat screen TVs, air conditioning, a phone all to himself. And he basically lived there in bed. I did rounds with the nurse one day because they have to do rounds at certain intervals to make sure everyone gets their medicine and whatnot. And she said, hey, listen, before we go in, I just want to let you know that this guy, he stinks really bad. And I'm like, oh, well, this whole place stinks, so it can't be that bad, right? And she's like, no, it's really bad. And I'm like, okay. So I opened the door and I let her in. She's got her little medicine cart. We go inside this place and it hits me just like a wall of funk. this smell that I've never smelled before. It's almost completely unnatural. It smells like shit and rotting flesh and just all this, just this cocktail of disgusting grossness. Turns out, she explains later on, she put some topical creams on and we leave. She explains to me later on, he's purposely reinfecting his wound with his own feces so that he stays in the smell.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So
that's the kind of shit you'll see in the hospital system. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so this guy basically was just securing his own air conditioned cell for infinity by doing this. And it was the most disgusting thing I ever experienced. I'm sorry for everybody listening. I didn't know what to bring that on you, but I was asked by Eric Stryker.
You have to read this fucking book. I mean, like, this is a glimpse into this world that you might regret looking into, but it's still amazing. Like, it's just amazing to read this.
People need to see, though, what's going on with these systems, though, whether it's the hospital system, whether it's the prison system, because, I mean, the prison systems came originally from a Quaker experimental idea of that if you just put people in some kind of solitude and make them think about what they did, they'll eventually come around and reform and rehabilitate. Now, this is something that could have only come from a Quaker's mind, basically, and it's spiraled and mutated into this because historically, the idea of the prison didn't really exist. Prisons were just holding cells until people generally had punishment. People had to be held somewhere. They were under house arrest of some kind, and then the punishment was generally very severe and very corporal or permanent, and that's kind of how, or it was financial. That was the idea of, like, holding people in a certain space for the rest of their lives is a very, very bizarre concept in human history. But because it's out of sight, out of mind, people have no idea what goes on inside of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the concept of say solitary confinement, which is the SHU, is it probably qualifies as torture, wouldn't you say, Jack?
I would say, well, to some extent. So SHU is basically what Hollywood would call the hole. You know, in Oz, they depict it as this place where you just get thrown into shadows for like months on end, and then eventually
and you're naked. Like, why? What's with the nakedness? What's with that?
That's a Jewish thing. Who knows? Yeah. but. In reality, SHU is basically just a prison within a prison. To, like, you go to prison because you can't be trusted with society. You go to SHU because you can't even be trusted in a prison community. So, you know, you're relegated a tertiary time to this place. And yes, it is very bare bones. When you're first in there, you get nothing. You get like shoes, a blanket, a mattress, and nothing. But it used to be a way to get rid of actual violent elements, guys who would do stabbings and fights and all this kind of stuff. But as time goes on, this is pretty much the only tool that officers have to get rid of these bad elements off of their housing units that they're trying to police. As time goes on, they're trying to reduce the role of SHU to even less of a punishment. So while as prison itself is becoming less of a deterrent to crime, SHU is becoming even less of a deterrent to prison-based crime. They're offering less. They're offering more and more amenities when you're in SHU, in the same amounts of amenities that they're offering your average general population person. So the easier it gets in general pop, the easier it also gets in SHU, and it's starting to become almost the lines are blurring. It's not really a tool to be used anymore of any effectiveness.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a bit of a kind of a philosophical question on this. Kind of, are you familiar with the Panopticon?
No, I'm not.
So Jeremy Bentham, the English philosopher, he tried to shop the scheme around to various locations, and very few prisons have actually ever adopted it. There's a few examples, but not many. But he came up with the idea of the Panopticon, where basically you have a circular prison where you have the warden who's situated in the center, and he's able to see everything that's going on at all times and just look at the prisoners in order to minimize any problems, any misbehavior, anything that they might do, because he's always got their eye on them the way that the prison is structured. Would something like, now that nobody really adopted that, but it was something that Jeremy Bentham deeply believed in. Is that something you think would ever be effective, or does it just sound bizarre or just kind of crazy or just foolish when you hear something like this, like this idea?
I mean, it's a good idea, and there are examples of it. Like physically, a lot of prisons do have that like central tower that's in the middle, and you have all the cells all around. And then combined with camera equipment, if you're in that panopticon in the center, you have full view and control of all the doors and all that kind of stuff. So physically it exists. Philosophically, whether that works or not as a prison tactic, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think I'm that smart to make that call. But in the prisons that I have worked, they did have things similar to that. They had what's called the bubble, and it was pretty much a secure little area in the center of the unit that kind of can take a look at everything around you. And then it was from there you can open all the doors, and it had all the secure tools and keys and things. It was also a meeting place for COs. So if you were eating lunch, if you had a break, you would go in there. But again, philosophically, I'm not sure. I don't think I'm that. I think I'm too grub to make that call.
I got a shout out to Hugo here. Pardon me, Grug, but are you enlightened to early 20th century sociological novelties?
Yeah, one thing I'll ask you though is, what would you recommend as maybe reforms to make maybe corrections more effective, or perhaps even reduce recidivism, or what would you say?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. So I talk about this in the book, one of the last chapters there. I call it the Goldilocks zone, because I think prison right now is far too soft, and in the areas in which it is hard, doesn't need to be that hard. So you create this aura of this idea of prison that's not really a detriment to the criminal. So we need to make a prison system that is not too tough. It's not too soft. It's just right. It's the Goldilocks zone, right? And I list a bunch of different things in there that I think we can make that happen. I don't have it in front of me, but I can maybe rattle off a few off the top of my head. I believe we should bring back the death penalty. I think it should be used liberally. It needs to be used fairly, because we all know what happens after someone like Jared Kushner gets a hold of the reins, and the first people to die in a federal prison system, they're almost all, white guys.
Look at Loretta Lynch, the federal death penalty we're talking about. Loretta Lynch is a lifelong anti-death penalty activist, and yet she was seeking it for white inmates only.
Right.
Take Dylann Roof, not to say what he did was right, but, Dylann Roof was being hit with the death penalty, even though Loretta Lynch says, the death penalty is racist and so on. So, yeah, either have it or don't. Don't make it some tool to use as a tool of racial resentment,
Exactly. It's picked and pruned. Like these white men that died, they probably did deserve it. I have no sympathy for them. But to ignore just the legions and legions of the other demographics that are in our prisons that probably deserve this too, that never get it. They're always going to have an ambulance chasing lawyer coming out in their defense, and probably get them off that death penalty. That doesn't exist for every demographic. So I think that should be abolished.
And the idea that the death penalty is not a deterrent for crime is a total made up sociological piece of ideology. You see how these guys fight really hard when they're on death row. So that alone tells you something, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Yeah. On top of that, I also believe in the banning of pornography. They need to remove it. It's twisting minds. I actually feel bad for some of these inmates who they have nothing to do all day but to just masturbate and they consume this material, and it fucks them up. And next thing you know, they are pairing up with the rubber glove. They're doing all this crazy stuff. They're getting into consensual relationships with other inmates. It's disgusting, but if porn didn't exist to send them down that spiral to begin with, it never would have happened. So get rid of it. I also believe in separation of the LGBTQ element from the general population. If a man does go to prison because he makes a mistake, he shouldn't have to live side by side with the violent, or with these other temptations, people who are trying to prey on him or trick him and coerce him into some sort of like gay tryst. It's ridiculous. It doesn't need to be tolerated.
I found it funny in your book when you mentioned that a gay man in the prison had a gay husband And they were entitled to a conjugal visit in the woke New York State system. And that the other inmates were freaking out about it because they're saying, yo, there's going to be shit all over the trailer.
Yeah, yeah. There was a gay inmate who had a husband, and he was entitled to a visit in those trailers you're talking about, the family reunion program. But the other inmates pressured him not to go because they didn't want, like, his faggot, quote-unquote, essence, his faggot shit, you know, taking over the trailers, because next week they might be in there with their wives and they got to deal with that, you know. So that's just the crazy stuff that you see happen.
Also, like, just one of the last things here, fucking the question of race. Is that, I know the New York system is the least racial of all of them, but is that a factor in the system? Like, race is definitely a factor, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I think, you know, if you're working in a correctional capacity, you always have to be aware of who you're dealing with. If something happens on your unit and, you know, say you don't know who the perpetrator is, you know, a lot of times you can leverage, you know, just simple race realism stuff to find out who it was, you know, and this kind of stuff can potentially keep you alive depending on the situations that you're in. Some COs are so fraught with the idea of being racist is bad, so they won't use this to their own advantage. And as a result, you know, they might get jammed up, or they just work every day in, like, this weird, confused state where they just refuse to come to terms with the reality of the racial situation behind bars. And it's sad. But some people just have these priors that they won't shake. Even COs, even people who see this every single day, never wake up to it. As far as inmates are concerned, yes, I mean, race does exist. You're going to hear, like, racial epitaphs all the time. You got black guys calling white inmates, like, you know, cracker and all that kind of stuff. But it really was less racial animosity than it was, like, the gang stuff. The gang stuff really kind of took prevalence behind bars more than anything else. So you might have seen white bloods, you might have seen white Latin kings and all this kind of stuff. And that was more impactful than just the skin or the ethnic correlation.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. People are talking in the chat about Peckerwoods and stuff. That's a California thing. That doesn't really exist in New York State. New York State sounds like a crazy fucking place. There is obviously a pecking order, though. And would you say, like, I've heard stories that sometimes the higher status inmates can, in some cases, have more power than the people working at the prison. I haven't heard stories like that about New York, but is there any truth to that?
Oh, it's 100% true. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it definitely is the case. A lot of times you have these high-ranking bloods or Latin kings in their individual housing unit. If they are surrounded by a lot of their colleagues, if you're a CO or anyone, you know, anyone on security staff, you could go to these, like, shot callers, these guys with a problem on the unit. Say you have one guy who, like, is always leaving his sheets up, or he's, like, doing all these infractions that's causing you a lot of pain from your supervisor. If you don't even talk to that inmate who's giving you problem, but instead you go to the guy, like, the big boss on the block and say, hey, tell this guy to cut the shit. Otherwise, I'm going to, like, start enforcing weird stuff on the unit no one's going to like. Within the day, that guy, you'll never have a problem with him again.
Oh, wow.
But that kind of power, that kind of play is really going to depend on how you are as a corrections officer. So if you're, like, a whack job who's always giving him problems, you might not have that ability. But if you're a normal level-headed guy who can see these situations for as they are and who knows how to communicate properly, you can, you know, you get a lot more flies with honey than you do vinegar, I suppose.
Yeah. Indeed. The another thing you wrote about in the book is that basically the COs, by and large, are very honest and trying to do the right thing, but there are some corrupt ones. And essentially, like, what I want to know is, like, how the fuck do drugs get in there? How do weapons, like, proliferate and so on? How do these things, like, there is some corruption there, isn't there?
There is. And luckily, I was never exposed to a lot of that. There was always rumors that people were bringing stuff in. I mean, it does happen, let's be honest. You've had COs. I knew COs that were like on the outside. They were embezzling funds from like their local fire departments and stuff like that. Just like scumbags, you know, guys who would just do shitty stuff. And then you did have guys who had like gambling debt. And then, you know, if they get too close to an inmate might manipulate them and have a, you know, make a CO think that the inmate is his friend. And then next thing you know, this guy is bringing stuff in for this inmate because he says his boy is going to give him some cash on the outside to help his gambling debts. And it happens. You know, it is crazy. However, a lot of contraband does get in from inmate families, just scamming the system. A lot of guys will find out a way to like, cut open a can of chunky soup or something, empty out the contents, fill it up with baggies of drugs and stuff, and then somehow reseal it. We've seen that a lot. All kinds of crazy stuff.
And you can actually, like, how do they get in? Like, they just bring it to them?
Yeah, like, so they'll just send, like, an inmate package. Like, hey, you got a care package from your family. Here you go. But meanwhile, he's got, like, 10 cans of chunky soup. But really, it's filled with, like, fentanyl and marijuana and all this kind of stuff. And that's why it's important to always like scan with the metal detector, the packages and stuff. Sometimes it slips by. You never know. But
yeah. Can you smoke in prison anymore in New York State?
Yeah, you can smoke, but it has to be in certain areas. When I left, that was still the case. So you had to be outside. You can't smoke in the cell. If you smoke in the cell, that's an infraction. You get written up for that. But guys did it anyway.
Oh, so you're telling me that if you get locked up, you can work out. You can get pussy. You can smoke cigarettes. You can drink alcohol. Why shouldn't you go to prison?
I mean, yeah, it's really not that bad when you put it that way. Sign me up. You also get free access to healthcare. You can get a college education. You get all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, is that a thing? You know, someone that has like a real bad like a cancer or something, and they don't have healthcare. They're literally incentivizing you to commit a crime because they'll just treat it for free, right?
Right, yeah. They have to keep you alive, you know, while you're incarcerated. You are a ward of the state. So if you have a crazy illness or something like that, that is, you know, affecting your health, they cannot show indifference to your medical needs. So they have to do it. And as crazy as this sounds, if you are transitioning and you go to jail.
No!
They have to keep. They have to keep paying for your Skittles that you take monthly in order to maintain your transition because it is detrimental to their mental health.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
So not only can you get pussy, not only can you work out, not only can you smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol, you can get a free transition as well. Sign me up. No.
where do you work out? The prison library.
Yeah. You know, yeah, this is some, like, you know, in all fairness, this is some disturbing stuff. Like, how many people quit after the first 5 years?
A lot, I would say. A lot. Yeah. Either they quit or they leave their first facility they go to because they are just spooked by it. A lot of guys will go. There's a lot of places that you can kind of skirt off to, at least in the New York State prison system, where it's not as bad. So for instance, I always worked like on housing units, like the rough spots. My easiest posts were always like towers and stuff. Cause you're just sitting up there with a bunch of firearms, just kind of relaxing. I'd smoke a cigar and whatnot, but that was only every once in a while. A lot of guys will try to shoot for those spots to have them year round, or they'll shoot for like maybe a mobile post where they just drive a truck around for a long time.
A funny little anecdote in the book when you scrape the truck.
Oh yeah, that was
balls for that. So
yeah. I mean, I was not great at driving these giant state trucks back then. I probably still not, but yeah. So if a guy just can't cut it, being around inmates and all the debauchery and stuff, there are places he can kind of escape to while still keeping his job.
Ah, well, you know, one thing that really kind of hit me in your book is that the system seems to punish honest people. And I've noticed this living in the shithole known as New York City my whole life, is that the people that do the right thing are punished and the people that do the wrong thing get away with it. And that's basically the rule overall, unless you're white. I mean, there's an interesting anecdote at the beginning of your book where you're at the Corrections Officer Academy, which I didn't know they even had for corrections officers, where there's five white guys that were dismissed at their graduation. They were fired because some black guy, you know, of course, they always, blacks always say stop snitching, but if it's a white person saying something racist, then they snitch. This guy ratted on five guys, and they were just dragged out of their graduation and lost their job, right?
Essentially, yeah. I think it was – we were doing graduation rehearsals is what it was. I think it was like a few days prior. But, yeah, this fellow cadet, you know, we were all doing PT and stuff like that. We were all in our dress blues practicing for this graduation, which was coming just a few days away. And one of our fellow cadets, apparently the entire time we were in this academy situation, which was like 2 or 3 months, he was clocking away this journal of every time someone around him even said something, even just a little bit off color. Whether any of it was true, I have no idea. But eventually he had gathered enough of this stuff. And right before graduation, he went up to the superintendent of the academy and squealed. And without any kind of, you know, major investigation, these people were just taken out. And because they were just cadets, you know, they didn't have any real union protection at that point. They just got canned almost immediately. And we never saw them again. And they were like the best guys in the class too, the most fit, the smartest, the cream of the crop. And it really is hard to find that kind of stuff in a correction setting, those kind of that caliber of man. And they were just completely dropped because this guy made a stink.
Yeah. No, yeah. No. Anyway, we're going to get to the questions now, but all I'll say is that I've only read about halfway through your book. I love every minute of it. It's fucking, I'm literally laughing out loud at all the different types of monkey shines and shenanigans going on. everything. And it's also wonderfully written. Like, just let me just give you your kudos, because it is some of the best writing I've read in a while. And
that's
so,
I appreciate that. That's some high praise coming from you guys. I'm sure you guys read all kinds of amazing
stuff. Got some grittiness that's very, to me, reminiscent of the kind of stuff that Celine was writing about, so in his fiction. So it's highly entertaining writing from what I've seen so far.
Well, what's funny is that if you're a white New Yorker, you're basically like a Buddha, because you've seen the worst of the world and you've achieved enlightenment through watching a nigger fuck a glove. Like, so like, you know, this is the thing, like, people have to understand that to develop antibodies to this disgusting system, you have to see it up close. You really got to get a big glob of it and put it right under your nose. And that's what you have. And that's why this book is one of my favorite books I've read in the last couple of years. Like, it's just amazing. So congratulations, man. And I'm glad you wrote this book. So
thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Let's get to the questions, Borzoi.
Sure. Sorry about all the squeaking, everybody. My dog's very needy tonight, so he keeps coming up to me. That's what all that was in the background. But all right, here we go. So our dear friend Tom donates. What does this say? It's in yellow. I can't read this. I think it's $20. What is this? I can't read that at all. Okay. Well, whatever he donated here, I can't tell. I am Polish in America. My wife is Chinese. We both want the NJP to succeed. Hail victory.
Oh, thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you very much. And we will succeed. The final victory is inevitable.
Junta Momonari donates $10. Please, white pill Ahab about demographics. Total fertility rate of all races in all Western countries are below replacement. In 6 to 9 years, most countries on the planet will peak population. Shortly after the population, all countries outside of sub-Saharan Africa will be in free fall. Population collapse, not overpopulation.
I'll make sure to get that to Ahab.
Yeah, McNabb has actually talked about that as well. McNabb, if you want some details on that, just hit up McNabb on that, because I know McNabb has been talking about that and has studied that, so I know he's got some studies on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Junta Momonari donates another $5. InfoWars, actually, I think he did it twice. It's the same thing, though, so I'll just bundle up to $10. InfoWars translated the interview with the Japanese politician Glenn was talking about. So he's talking about that donation from Glenn the Chinaman from last week, which was all in Japanese, which obviously I couldn't read. And InfoWars has their own summation of it. Now, I guess this is back from November 25th, 2020. And it's Paul Joseph Watson. So imagine my shock. But Japanese foreign minister announces plan to transform Japan into a diverse, multi-ethnic society. Toshimitsu Motegi is a politician for the LDP and has served as the country's minister for foreign affairs since September 2019. During a Q&A session, Motegi said his national vision meant transforming Japan in the 21st century into a diversified, multi-ethnic society by way of mass immigration from all over the world. This would be achieved by codifying English as the country's second language and giving suffrage to resident foreigners. And
blame America. Blame America. I mean, that's all emanating from Washington, D.C. I mean, do you think that the Japanese themselves, that this occurs to them naturally? No. They're getting their marching orders from the United States government and its various NGOs, and they're just doing what they say, you know?
Yeah, basically. Just continuing from that. So people who are wondering what, I guess, yeah, I mean, I had heard about that before, so I didn't realize that Glenn was linking to something that had been reported before. But yeah, there's more information on that for people who want to look into that. But moving on to the next set of donations here. We have Mongolian MP40 donates $20. What do you think the current administration will have in store for the Second Amendment? Biden has promised to essentially gut it, and the GOP can't be relied on for anything good. Glad to have TPS back.
Yeah, well, I think that it's going to be, honestly, and this is an unpopular opinion, but honestly, as a New York fag, like a New York libtard, I will say this. The gun is actually more of a liability, at least in my personal case. Like, I don't own a gun. I could easily own one if I wanted to. I have every legal right to, but I don't own one because they're constantly changing the laws. They're constantly doing various pedantic changes to it where you might be in violation of it at any moment. And essentially, America has gotten to the point under Trump, by the way. Donald Trump has done more gun arrests through the federal government than any other president in modern history. So that's already kind of a trend. And they've seemed to have gotten to a point where having a gun, not to say you shouldn't, but if you're a high profile political dissident and you have a gun, they will try and fuck you somehow with that. Like if you go to a bar or something and some girl gives you like a hit of weed or something and a fed sees you, like they can get you for saying like, oh, you're a gun owner who lied on your application to buy a gun when you said you don't use drugs. Like, that's the kind of shit that they do, and I've been seeing it more and more. So if Joe Biden wants to do a full frontal attack on the Second Amendment, he's probably going to fail because the institutions are not 100% on board with that. That's just my perspective on it.
I have nothing else to add to that. Unless Jack does, I will move on to the next donation.
Nothing really. I mean, it does make a lot of sense. You know, why tackle gun ownership in and of itself if they can just make it such a pain to even own one or deploy one?
Right.
Yeah.
You can't be a legal gun owner and bowl on Sunday. So boom, FBI comes to your house. That's it. That's how it is.
Vito Grappa donates $7.77. Really looking forward to this book. A good way to cap off a week in the financial heboptacon.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you enjoy it.
And he donates another $3 to say, to quote Nick Land, jail sounds like a heat-fucked chaos.
That's actually very poignant. Yeah, you know, it's very hot in prison. Disgusting. Disgustingly hot.
Yeah, there's no... Is there... There is central heating, though, right?
Yeah. So when the heat's on and it's pumping. But there's no air conditioning. So, you know, it's blazing hot in the winter, and during the summer, you're sweating your ass off 24/7.
Do the inmates do any outside chores? Like, are they like working and stuff? Is there like a way to get like a prison job? Cause I remember there was a big scandal a few years ago where like AT&T was using prisoners to pick up their phone for customer service.
So yeah, state, again, this is New York. A lot of like yards and grounds guys, you'll have inmates cut grass. You'll have inmates, you know, tend to everything around the grounds of the facility. A lot of cleaners, a lot of cooks, a lot of porters and various guys like that. Yeah, there's all kinds of jobs you can get. But a lot of them are also very like kind of like low IQ jobs as well. So this is not like rocket science.
You can, though, one thing, though, you can get like a college education in prison, right, through the mail and shit.
Well, thanks to, and I write about this as well, there's a whole chapter on it. NGOs, outside prison advocate groups, you can straight up get a degree from NYU or for any one of these pilot educational institutions that pour money into this system. It's all from outside donors and stuff. This is not on taxpayer dime, but yes, you can get a college education through jail in the New York system.
I'm sorry. I know you're probably going to be offended by this, Jack, but prison sounds like an actual way to move up in the world from what you're telling me.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I think about it all the time. It's like, hey, if I went to jail tomorrow just for some random thing, would it really be all that bad knowing what I know? And, you know, the lack of freedom sucks. Not being with your loved ones sucks. But, you know, hey.
Well, you do get that weekend in the trailer.
You do. If you play nice, you do.
There you go.
Okay. Let's see here. Dog's in really well. We might need some power. It is
kind of sad, though, that to get a free college education and to get health care, you have to be locked up for rape or murder. That is pretty fucked up. I got to be honest.
Like, yeah. People are struggling to pay off college debt. They're struggling to even go to college in the first place. They don't have access to any of this kind of stuff. And inmates are just getting it for free. And why? Because the elite that, you know, orchestrate this whole system just allow it to happen. And I talk about it in the book. It's all just this big transaction.
Yeah. This is, again, what I was talking about. Like, the people that are decent and honest and do the right thing, they get punished. And then the people that do the opposite, they get a college education. Like, that's like, I can't believe that this is actually possible, that you can actually get a degree from New York University in prison. That's insane. Fucking sick.
Pure, Bavarian donates $14.88. Joe Biden is ordering the Justice Department to stop funding private prisons. Is this a good development? Where do the Jews fit into all of this?
What do you think of this, Jack?
I mean, you know, a lot of prison policy is written in places like Albany. It all comes from the governor's office. The governor is technically a corrections officer. He's like a penultimate boss. It's all of it's Jewish. The educational thing with people getting free diplomas. You know, this all comes from NGOs. I'm trying to find it here. I wrote about it in the book. But you have this one NGO that's run by this guy, Sean Pica, Sean Pica, who he himself was a contract killer. He killed the father of his like ex-girlfriend for apparently like $50. And within like 10 years or something like that, he was released. I read about it in the book. It's all sourced. And now he runs the biggest NGO for prison education. He gets these animals, these diplomas, and he collects money from outside donors to make it happen. And we all know where the donations are coming from. And it's just this wheel of, you know, I'm going to insert this money into this NGO. And as a result, you know, all of my fellow liberal, neoliberal co-ethics are going to smile at me because I'm doing, you know, a good thing. It's just disgusting. And then the people that are employed in the institutions run by these people that donate to the NGOs don't even get it paid enough to go to college themselves. It's just awful.
Well, what's the what would you say is the difference between a publicly run prison and a private one?
Well, I think it really comes down to like some of the regulations, like a private prison. I've never worked in a private prison. They don't have them in New York. The amount of states that they are even allowed in now, I think, are pretty limited. But I have heard stories, the kind of stuff that goes on there. The food is even worse, if you could even believe that.
What's the word? Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Apparently, in a private system, everything is the bottom line. So while in a state system, it might be like things like the food and, you know, maybe the clothing that's issued might be, you know, scrutinized to keep it as cheap as possible. In a private prison, everything is. And that includes the security. A lot of times they won't even hire enough staff to like guard the tower. So they just have camera systems. They have like basically a drone CO watching the yard during yard times and stuff. And escapes happen all the time as a result.
Yeah, and they probably don't have unions either, right? Like they don't have to deal with that.
I'm not sure. I highly doubt that a private prison would have union labor behind it, but I don't know.
You know what it is, Jack? You and me, we kind of, I think we're probably birds of a feather here. And I used to always bitch about the union I was in years ago. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like, you know, one time I got in trouble because I was like, you know, I used to wear a flight jacket with neo-Nazi patches on it. And people reported me to my boss, and my union actually defended me, to be honest. So, like, we might bitch about our unions all the time, and they do suck, but it's good to have them to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very pro-union, even to this day. But I'm able to critique their current state and find their weaknesses and pinpoint that kind of stuff because I want them to do better. I want them to serve the membership of all unions, fuck just the CO, everything. I want them to actually do good and reflect the values of the workers that are actually filling the ranks of those unions.
Right. Right. It's just difficult because a lot of unions now have just kind of made peace with power. And so, you know, basically they understand, like, if you're in a CO union or a police union, you understand that you're under attack from everyone. You're under attack from activists. You're under attack from the media. And then, thus, you're under attack from the state. And so those guys try to be as politically correct as possible and give as much ground as possible in order to just fight another day. You know, that's kind of the sad part of it. But I used to know guys, and I fucking like that part in your book where you talk about, like, there's tons of like big-hearted guys in unions that are like just union representatives and stuff, but there's also real corrupt pieces of shit. So I guess the solution is to lean in on the good guys, right? And that's about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, my experience with it, I kind of drew a lot of parallels with like the modern day Republican Party. So if you are a guy who has a big heart and you want to champion the rights of your fellow working man, you see a lot of injustice, you know, every day when you clock in, you go naturally to the union because it's your only outlet. But really, again, this is a giant pressure release valve to get you off the correct path and to just mire you in just needless fights that go nowhere and to just keep you tripping up over these things that don't matter. And that's the unfortunate reality of it. I just wish it didn't have to be that way, but unfortunately it is.
One other thing is that in your book, you're talking about like it's clear that many of the corrections officers are Italian and Irish. But there's also like some country guys from New York State. What were the politics amongst them? Like, was there any tension? Was there like some disagreements and so on?
Yeah, so this actually happens more in New York's kind of a special scenario. So the farther north you go in New York and the farther out west, you're going to see entire corrections, entire jails are run by relatives. So like the whole day shift could have some sort of like distant relation, cousins, mother-in-law, father-in-law, the whole family is literally a CO because there's no other jobs up in those areas.
Yeah.
Places where I was more in the central of the state. It's a little bit more diverse. You're going to get all kinds of different people. You did see like father, son, like dynasties every once in a while, but it wasn't as prevalent. The farther north you go, the more you're going to see COs like the same last name all the time.
Yeah, like Clinton, right? Clinton's right up there.
Clinton, Attica, all these places. And you know, I didn't really experience a lot of that. So I'm not sure what the politics were like, but I'm sure it probably got pretty heated if one guy disagrees. And
what's funny though is New York has really notorious jails and prisons like Attica, Rikers. Like I grew up not that far from Rikers, and it has a really intense reputation. Is it deserved?
A place like Rikers is a zoo. That's not.
I was waiting for you.
that is not where I would never work there. Literally, that's like.
You tell me if this is plausible. I heard that at Rikers they have something called a Rikers facial, where the inmates. Let me just finish. So the inmates, what they do is they put scalding hot water. They have access to really hot water, and they put it in a cup. And then they squeeze baby oil into it and they throw it into your face. And that shit sticks to your face because of the baby oil. Is that the fantasy or reality? Is that something plausible?
That could happen. I could see that potentially happening. Inmates, they're able to come up with all kinds of stuff. They're very, very crafty people. So something like that very well could happen. A lot of times what inmates will do is they'll alter some of the stuff that they are allowed to have. Like a lot of them will have like a hot pot that gets a certain temperature. It doesn't get like to boiling, but they can allow them to make like ramen soups and stuff in the cell, stuff that they can buy. But some guys know how to tamper with it so that the heat governor on it is off and it can boil stuff. Some of these guys know how to do that. If you get one of these guys, then yes, what you describe can definitely happen.
Yeah, because like, it's kind of stupid in a sense because, like, in the short term, you get to fuck with the guy you don't like. But in the long term, they just take your privileges away, right? Like, you're just never going to have hot water again, right?
I mean, yeah, and that's not even – like, I would never even say never. Eventually, they probably give it back to him.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's like – I could definitely see that happening, yeah.
Let's go to the next one, Borzoi.
All right. I'm going to run through these because dog's getting – restless. Tam donates $20. Thank you, Tam.
Thank you, Tam.
Xi Jinping donates his weekly $5 to us. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. Good luck in your trade war.
Borzette donates $100.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, that is. And that. Which is funny. It's funny that my wife donates $100 because I'm just getting 50 of my dollars back anyways. It's the name he chose. Mark donates $20. Glad to see the return of TPS. And the guests have been really great. The Goomba and the China Dog are killing it.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. It's funny. In your book, Jack. The guineas in there are actually like they're all characters, like they're all like kind of funny in their own way. Like there's one scene where you describe one of the Ginzos, and he's a union leader of some kind, and you describe him as being loud, annoying, and getting in your personal space, but he's got a big heart, and I'm like. That sounds like me.
Yeah. Good guys. You know, the Italians, good people. I got nothing bad to say about them.
Well, you know what it is that, I mean, Irish people and Italian people tend to be the working class of New York.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the rural parts. That might be different. But in the city, at least, that's the working class. And those are the best fucking people, man. And they are so red-pilled, if we're gonna use that term. They can tell you everything about literally every race, including, like, Nepalese. Like, I can tell you whatever you need to know about people from Nepal. Yeah. Oh, what do you? Oh,
it's just the way you. It's just the way. It's just the emphasis that you applied to it that just made me laugh. That's all.
Let's go to the next.
Okay, next one. Big Snood donates $2. Bro, did you see these gay blacks?
What would you say, Jack? I mean, this is probably not something that relevant to your expertise, but Is it true that niggas is gay?
It would actually be true. Yes, niggas is indeed gay.
Because, I mean, there's no gay rape in, like, prisons in Poland or even Wales. Like, I was reading a study where they said there hasn't been a single prison rape in the Welsh prison system for about 120 years. Hmm. So the whole thing about, like, two men sleeping with each other, it seems to be a very American and, frankly, a black thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it very well could. I would like to see if those European prisons have pornography in them or if it's allowed.
Well, let's be fair, though. Let me play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
If you're locked in a cell and you're not seeing a woman for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the pornography can kind of mitigate that a little bit, I suppose. I mean, that wouldn't that be the logic behind it?
Sure. It could. You know, I'm not going to argue that. That urge is still going to be there even when you're locked up. But when you have guys literally trading porno magazines that they've, like, stapled and, like, basically jury-rigged together, trade them for, like, cakes, and you actually have people get nudie pictures from their wives in the mail, and they'll trade it for a pack of smokes. I mean, this behavior is just, it's just out of control. It's degenerate. And if it just was not allowed at all, it would never get to that point. There's nothing more degrading than, like, taking, because you're so fiendish for, like, new porn or like a pack of smokes or a bag of potato chips. You give a picture of your naked wife to somebody else as a form of porn. It's freakish, you know? And it's just, that's my gripe with the porn situation. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, my old thing with porn is that, you know, everyone, my main criticism of porn is the internet pornography, because the different novel types of porn are just one click away. And it's definitely true that it burrows a kind of thing in some people's brains. Not everyone, but there's tons of people that are on the fence about these things, like, especially younger guys. And if they watch the wrong type of porn, they're just going to go, like, they're going to become trannies, or, you know, they're going to start watching, like, tranny porn and shit like that. So I totally agree with that. Now, my whole thing is to be a little empathetic with the prisoners, in the sense that, like, yo, you're not getting any, because as you say in the book, you can't just get some chicken head from the street to come visit you in the trailer. You have to actually be married to her and this and that. So, like, I kind of, you know, I kind of empathize, because if you're doing a long stretch and you're, like, a man in your 20s or 30s, like, that can be a very difficult situation for you, you know? So that's just my view on that. Like, there should be, like, have you ever looked into actual prisons in Scandinavia?
I did a while back. I saw they had, like, PlayStations and stuff. Like, it was wild. It almost looked like a hotel.
Well, first of all, the prison cells are like an IKEA apartment. Mm. But the main thing is that most of the prison guards are female. So that, if you can believe that, that's really funny. But it just shows you the different temperaments and the different ideologies that go into this system. Like, maybe if we had a country of only whites, we could have a prison system like that. Like, I'm a person that is somewhat empathetic to people in the prison system to an extent. However, I also think that, like, child pornographers and, like, people that rape people and fucking murderers and shit, like, they should just be shot, like, period. You know,
I agree. I mean, I agree. I'm an advocate for the chemical castration thing. I think if you're going to be one of these guys, and in, you know, the prison system nowadays, if you're, like, a child molester or one of these guys, prison is actually just a revolving door for you, because your sentences are not that long.
Really?
No. Drug dealers will be in prison longer than a sexual predator is. Chemical castration is a way to stem this stuff. And barring that, you know, just straight up something more.
Yes. Perhaps. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I agree with you completely on that. Let's go to the next one, Borza.
I think this is the last one right here. Borzoi's dog, Squeaky Toy. Borzoi dog's Squeaky Toy donates $5. I'm Polish in America, and my wife is Chinese. She was taught by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, that Ernest Scared Stupid is an accurate documentary on prison. Is this true?
I'm a big fan of Ernest. So I'm going to agree just the fact alone that those movies are great. So yes, let's just picture that as the actual prison system.
What, like, do you know what the federal prisons are like? What's that like?
You know, unfortunately I don't have a lot of input there. But I do know, again, they're going to like vary depending on, the denomination. So I think we talked about this before, but like state prison doesn't have like really, state prison has expanded visitation. They have the conjugal visit trailers. They have a lot of things that federal does not. Federal gets a bad rap for like, you know, federal, you know, rape prison and all this kind of stuff. I don't even know if that's 100% true or not. I highly doubt it is, knowing what I know about jail and prison and stuff like that. But I don't think I'm really an expert to call that.
Mm. Would you say, though, that federal prison is a little worse than state? You said it before, right?
Yeah, I think it probably is. Again, I've never been in it. I've never worked there. But just from the kind of stories you hear, it sounds like it's a little more tightly run.
Ah, yeah, because they take that seriously.
Yeah.
You know, because federal prison oftentimes has like political prisoners in it, so they're going to take that seriously. They're only going to joke around and treat the real criminals as a joke. You know,
but now that I'm thinking about it, because Mike talked about this on TRS a lot too. It's about how, you know, there's a few prisons, federal prisons, that actually have like Jewish units, and that's definitely a
thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so knowing that, it might not be as hard. I guess it really depends on who you are, what your demographic is going in.
What's the advantage of showing up on the first day when you get sentenced and you get sent up? You show up on the first day and you go, I'm Jewish. I only get kosher food. I heard that there's an advantage to that. What's the advantage?
The food's supposed to be a lot better. You always get the food tastes better. You always get like this giant stack of like a fresh matzah. With every meal, except for maybe like breakfast. But then the thing with the matzah is too, it's like comes in prepackaged and you could trade that easy. That's an easy trade. So it's basically like you're getting a meal. Not only does it taste better, but it comes with like some currency with it.
Oh, that explains it. The same with people that say they're Muslims, right?
Right. Yeah. Muslims have certain dietary restrictions too. In New York State, a lot of the Muslim convicts, it was almost like a state-approved gang, you know, because if you were a Muslim guy and you walked around with the kufi on, it was the same as you being like in the Bloods. Like nobody fucked with you. The only difference is that the Muslims, the NOI, these kind of guys were state recognized and they allowed to have classes. They could, you know, go to their religious services and stuff, and they could make a show of it out in public, whereas the Bloods had to be more discreet. So there was some power in that.
That's fucking hilarious. Holy shit. Oh my God. Anyway.
We got one more. And Bishop Knight Pond donates $5. Keep the prisons kosher. Shout out to my brother Kev.
Alrighty. Shout out to Kev. Alrighty. So, Mr. McCracken, back when I go back to New York, I'll hit you up. We'll get some drinks.
All right. Yeah, you might see me at the next NJP, whatever that is.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is just an amazing book. Everyone go out and buy it. ASAP. It's on the Antelope Hill Publishing website. You can find that on my Twitter account. Anything else, Borzoi?
Bixnude donates $1. Now that GME stock is weaponized, it's more important than ever to rid Benjamin Franklin of the anti-gamer smear. I don't know what that means exactly.
If you look at my Twitter right now, I got a meme. I feel like my mother, actually. When my mother sent me a meme once. I'm not a meme guy, but I made one here, and it's the Vince McMahon meme here. Borzoi, could you put this on the screen?
Sure. Where did you post it in the side chat? I'm like, no, God, freaking out.
What kind of dog do you have anyway?
German Shepherd. Where'd you send it to me?
I put it in the side chat.
You put it in the side? Oh, there it is right there. Okay. hey, you, knock it off. All right. Here we go. All right, let me put that up on the screen right there. Boom. Okay. We got... Oh, it's... I can't. I'm going to have to try and minimize this a little bit. We're going to make easy money. We'll bankrupt the hedge fund in the process and prove capitalism is fake and discredit the JLF forever. The Vince McMahon meme right
there. There we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's about it for us. And,
yeah, I got to take this dog out. I've been trying to... He's freaking out right now. He's really got to go outside. Oh,
poor dog. So, the poor dog, yeah.
Yeah, so I promised I would read this off. So, by the way, everyone listen to the Third Rail tomorrow. Very special guest, someone who's been requested to come back. He will be on tomorrow. And let me read this out right here. From our friends at Antelope Hill. We come to the end of another day. We had our work, we had our play, but now it is time to say hail bedtime. Hail what tomorrow brings, hail the dawn, hail the spring. Together let us sing hail bedtime. I'm playing the music now. And thank you very much for coming on, Jack McCracken. Thank you to the live audience.
Thank you for having me on. You guys have a good night.
You too, man.
All right.
All right.